Okay, welcome to today's practitioner training call. My name is Josh Winter, and I'm the Sales and Marketing Director of Quantum Touch. And today we have a wonderful surprise. We're here with Richard Gordon, the founder of Quantum Touch. Welcome to the call, Richard.
Hey, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
So Devin and I really sat down. Devin, in case you're new to Quantum Touch, is the practitioner director and the director of the practitioner training program. And we sat down and really were thinking, you know, it would be really interesting to get Richard's perspective on how he started. And for those of you, hopefully you've read the book by now many times over, and he talks about his story. But to go a little bit further in depth on how he grew the Quantum Touch business as a whole, and then any special tips or things that we can garner from him to help you grow your practice is really the outcome of this call. So just to get started, I know some of this will be redundant, but maybe we'll get a couple extra details here and there. So really, Richard, when you started out, were, you know, before Quantum Touch, were you already involved in alternative healing? And if so, what modalities were you using before Quantum Touch?
Well, before Quantum Touch, I had written the best-selling book, Your Healing Hands, The Polarity Experience, except that I had learned Quantum Touch about 3 months before the book actually went into print. The book, Quantum Touch, The Power to Heal, was soon to become a bestseller, but it hadn't quite made it there yet. And it hadn't even gotten in print. So I had been doing polarity therapy for years and years and thought it was the best thing out there. Didn't think there was going to be anything I'd ever find to be better than polarity therapy. And when I saw Robert Rasmussen working and saw that with a light touch, Bob could get bones to move back into alignment, I was just blown away. And the crazy stories he was telling about radical healing at incredibly fast pace just astounded me. Well, once I learned that I could do this work, and I had been his friend and neighbor and apprentice, was starting to apprentice with him, and the book started coming out and selling incredibly well. It was, I think, the 10th best-selling holistic health book throughout the 1980s. I already had lost interest.
This was the polarity, or this is the...
Yeah, this was the polarity book, Your Healing Hands, The Polarity Experience.
Gotcha. Uh-huh.
And here's my book, and it's like a bestseller, and I've already lost interest in the subject because...
Wow.
I mean, I could have toured the world and, you know, done things with that book, but I wasn't interested, even though there's some really good things in there. Everybody wants to pick up that book. Just the tummy rock by itself is worth the price of admission. It's an amazing technique that you can use in your sessions if you've got somebody on a table while they're laying down. But anyway, the work with Bob and what we now call Quantum Touch just astounded me. I couldn't believe how fast and powerfully it worked. It also handled some other issues, like with polarity therapy. If people weren't really coming from their heart and their gratitude during sessions, it was possible for them to get tired or drained during the work. But that got eliminated with Quantum Touch because we learned how to raise our vibration of the energy during the session so that you never became depleted as a result of doing sessions.
And so once you saw Bob, you saw the work was Bob was doing, was it right then that you knew, hey, I'm going to take this work and I'm going to advance upon it? Or you more said, let me learn the most I can? I know you tried to kind of prove it first to say, am I hearing correctly? Am I seeing correctly? Is this
well, not,
true?
Well, not exactly. Right? No, I knew immediately that it was working. I could see it before my eyes. I didn't have any doubt about that at all. I remember after doing it for about a year and a half, I asked Bob, is it okay if I start teaching this and start sharing it with people? He wrote me a beautiful letter saying, you know, as long as you're bringing this to the world, I'm happy for you to, you know, take it out there and do what you like with it. He didn't even come up with a name for his modality for the first 27 years after he had discovered it.
Wow.
And so I just started running with it. I didn't come up with the name Quantum Touch until I think it was about 1995 or something like that. And that was just astounding to me that we could work in this fashion so powerfully and so quickly that I recognized immediately that this was a breakthrough and that it needed to get out there into the world. Even polarity therapy was a breakthrough in that it showed us that the life force energy was incredibly powerful and valuable, and that it didn't follow the scientific models of the time that told us what reality was. This was outside of the consensus reality, and I knew that that was something that I wanted to get out there and really promote.
So your first process, it sounds like, was really learning about the work and then doing it. So you learned it, you spent time to get your training in, and then you just did it for a while before anything else took place. That was kind of your first step?
Yeah, well, you have to learn something before you can do anything with it. And I was inspired to give lots of sessions and to teach workshops. So at the very beginning, what I did was I just started demonstrating and showing everybody I met, like, oh my God, look at this. This is the coolest thing. And people were just wanting to get sessions and wanting to learn how to do it themselves. My first...
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, where did you go to do it? Were you just, did you go to events? Did you go to different locations?
No, I just in my life, I people meet people all the time, and I was just talking to them about what I was doing and how excited I was, and they'd, and they'd say, well, I have a painful shoulder, or I've got a headache or whatever, and I do my little magic, and they go, oh, my God, that's amazing. And I say, yeah, well, you know, if you're ever interested, I can teach you how to do this. They go, when is that? You know, how much does that cost? And so I would do it, and I would teach people what I was learning. I taught some workshops in Santa Cruz back in about 1982, which was just very preliminary, getting people started. And then in earnest, I started teaching workshops in about 94, 95. And what had happened was I had worked with Bob. I got a call from Bob Rasmussen's friend one day, and she told me that he was really sick and that he had had a gallbladder attack, and the doctors wanted to amputate his gallbladder. And so I drove down from Santa Cruz down to Los Angeles, went to some little motel somewhere where he was staying, and he didn't want to go under surgery. So I worked on him for about an hour and a quarter, and he sweated like crazy and took a shower and said, thank you very much. And that was kind of the last that I saw of him for a long time, because our lives moved in different directions. And I became really fascinated with the work that would later become self-created health. And I kind of dropped the energy work for a while I did a lot of other things and kind of pursued some other interests. And when I saw Bob again many years later, the first thing he told me was that he's never had any problem with his gallbladder since I did that session. So I studied with him some more, learned what he was up to, and started taking over in his retirement and bringing quantum touch into the world. And that was my passion, was to get it out there. And the first couple classes I had, each had four students, where I was just gathering a few people who wanted to learn the stuff and sharing it with them. And gradually, by sharing the work, the class size grew, and I was able to get it out there. Now, the way that I would organize classes that has been most effective for me, and this will work for most people but not everybody, because some people are just very uncomfortable speaking in public, but I would just start giving talks, any opportunity I could find or create, give lecture demonstrations.
So would this be like what at a library or at a were you renting space or it could be free or?
Like some people were having an event and they say, hey, why don't you just talk for, 20 minutes or something, or there'd be a, somebody having a party and say, hey, Richard, why don't we gather everybody together for 10 minutes and you can show people what you're doing? Whatever it was, I would just any opportunity I had, I would just kind of talk to a bunch of people. And whenever I was in front of a bunch of people and starting to show them both my enthusiasm and how powerful the work was, they'd be blown away. And a lot of them would want to learn how to do it. And that's how I started gathering students and a lot of people to work on. I would do session after session, because after a lecture, tons of people would want sessions and tons of people would want to learn how to do it. And so that's what I did.
That's so exciting to hear, because it seems like every single successful practitioner instructor that I've interviewed has said the exact same thing. The first thing they did is they got in, and they just started doing it everywhere they went. And people have such a good response, they start coming to you. It's like
yeah.
there becomes this demand. That's amazing. So then all of a sudden you're doing these talks. People are wanting workshops. So you just started to – is that how that kind of birthed itself where you started saying, okay, well, I'm just going to start to do these all over the place? Or did people start to call you and say, would you come to this location or would you come to this city?
Well,
or
it was a combination of things. One woman, you know, volunteered to help get groups of people together for me to talk to, and other situations start opening up. And then I wrote my book. And then I hired a woman to set up lectures for me to give. And so I ended up traveling 3, 4, 5. I'd go to a city and give 3, 4, or 5 lectures in that city. And then I'd fly to the next city, give the workshop. And then I'd go back to city number 2 and give 3, 4, or 5 lectures. And then go back to city number 1 and give the workshop. And I was on the road 3, sometimes 4 weeks out of the month. And it was just exhausting. But a lot of people got introduced to the work, and it really got it out there on a big scale.
And you did this for how long?
Oh, a few years. Mm-hmm. And just to get Quantum Touch off the ground, just endless lectures. And in the course of giving all those lectures and demonstrations, I'd come up with, you know, some funny lines, like the guy that sells the cheap suits on TV, and I'd say, I'll guarantee that on the first day of a workshop, before lunch break, you'll be able to do something that's considered physiologically impossible, which is move hips back into alignment with a light touch, you know, or your money back. And people would take me up on it. They go, wow, that's pretty impressive. You know, that I'm guaranteeing that they're going to be able to adjust the person's posture with a light touch before lunch break on the first day of a workshop. That's crazy. So they'd, you know, once in a while, somebody challenged me and said, hey, I don't believe I can really do it. And I'd say, okay, great, let's experiment and find out. And sure enough, they could do it. And they were really shocked and surprised and delighted that they actually could do it. And I remember one woman was really disappointed that she failed at failing. But she just wanted her money back. And she tried to do the technique, and by God, the bones moved completely. It was obvious. And she was like, so disappointed. She had succeeded.
I was curious too, as you were traveling, how did you fill the rooms, or how did that whole process happen?
I wasn't doing it at that point. I had a woman who was booking, so I'd often speak at bookstores or churches, or there'd be some kind of conference, and I'd speak at the conference or a college or a chiropractic college or some kind of place that was already organized for me. And
but I guess some, oh, go ahead.
Yeah. And some of them were very enthusiastic and some of them weren't, but it's just all part of the process.
Well, I think the way I'm thinking about it is, I mean, at that point you were bringing the work to everybody, so people hadn't heard of the work. It was new, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, you had a book, and you had one best-selling book before that, but still it was relatively new. So a lot of these, let's say, practitioners or instructors who are wanting to explore the works, well, you know, a little bit more well-known now, but they could essentially do something similar where they have somebody help book sessions or go to new places and speak
right.
and hold intro nights, and then they could hold a workshop. So they could do almost a very similar model that you did, because you, at the time, you were growing it, so you were funding it yourself, you're paying that person to grow it. And as you grew the classes, correct?
Yeah.
And how big were the class size ranges? Were some of them small and some of them large?
When I finally got on the road, the classes ranged from about 30 people, then they got up to about 50. And by the time I stopped being on the road, I was regularly having classes over 100 people.
What changed from the 30 starting? Did you get better at the intro night?
Momentum. It was just momentum that more and more people were excited, and they, you know, if they knew I was going to Washington State, they'd, you know, they're kind of aware of what was going on, and more people would show up to the lectures. It was just building the momentum of it, and maybe I was getting better at giving lectures as well, but it was a combination of ingredients. But if you get excited about the work and you're passionate about it and you want to show it off to people, there's a lot of folks who are going to want to know what you've discovered, and they will want to learn from you.
I'm curious. Getting the modality started and getting the work started, what drove you? If there was, like you said, maybe there was a group of four, then as you started growing, there was a group of 30. What was driving you to continue pushing on? Can you, when the days were tough or the long, what was driving you?
Well, I think that it was, in a sense, the larger vision. And it's what I'm really working on today, too. It's the same thing, is that I know that we have something here that will change the world. And the world has been driven by priorities and beliefs that have been misplaced, in my opinion. And when people realize that the life force energy is real, that their love is actually real, that it changes the world, then that could actually change the primary sciences, change the dominant beliefs that people have about reality. And that could help change people's priorities, because beliefs shape attitudes, which determine thoughts and feelings, which determine all choices and decisions. And if you are making different kinds of decisions and different kinds of choices, you will attract and create a different kind of reality. It's very simple and very clear that it works that way.
So that sense of contribution, of shifting the world, of changing the world, improving the world, is what kept going you again and again and again.
Well, also, I was broke and I needed to make some money, but that was also driving me. But that wasn't really what motivated me, because I had other opportunities, mm-hmm. and I just wasn't passionate about the other opportunities because they didn't inspire me, and this one did.
Well, I think it's important to note, too, because like you said, it wasn't like you had hundreds of millions of dollars to just fund this. You had to create it. You had to get out there and share the work and to do the workshop. So I think a lot of practitioners and instructors, when they get started, finances is an area they're wanting to build upon. Some of them are doing really well, and some of them. So I guess the point to note is you built the whole organization off not having the money, just on the vision that inspired you to get out there and share it. So if you could do that, then anybody could really come in and do something very similar if they were passionate enough and got out there and shared it with enough people. They could start to self-fund themselves, too. I'm curious.
You just have to have a lot of passion and willingness to continue sharing it and being excited about it. And when you realize how valuable and beautiful this thing is and how high you get by doing the sessions and teaching other people and seeing their joy at learning it. Another thing I did that really helped me propel it and grow it was I would go to these conferences, like New Age Fair type of things or other fairs, and I would set up a booth and or give a lecture, but the best was to do both. And at the lecture demonstrations or at the booth, I'd have other practitioners or friends of mine who had learned to do it. And this is like working on no budget whatsoever. I would take my printer and I'd get colored pieces of heavy paper, and I'd print on some 5 minutes for $5, and other pieces of paper I'd print It's a Miracle, and I'd stick them on the back curtain of the booth or the place where my table was set up, like balloons. And people would walk by, and they would never stop. So what I do is I'd encounter them and I'd say, hey, have you got some pain? And they'd say, no. And I'd say, would you like some? And they'd laugh and they'd say, okay, what do you got? And then I'd say, okay, well, let's see what we can do. And then it was like really amazing, but virtually everybody had pain relief from 5 minutes. And so then I remember one case, a man had some pain, and his pain didn't go away in the 5 minutes. And I'd say, well, tell you what, here's your $5 back, and give it to this woman in the booth, and let her try working on you. Because, oh, no, it's really okay. I said, no, try it out. Here, give me the $5, give it to her. And he did, and his pain went away in the second 5 minutes that he got the session.
That's great.
And so I would give these lectures. And if the lecturers, what, and this is a really big clue for anybody who wants to get a lot of classes and a lot of people. Just when you do the lectures, do the demonstrations on everybody there if you can. And that's what I was doing. I was just, before the lecture would start, I'd be working for half an hour on people as much as I could. After the lecture, I'd work for another half an hour or an hour on people. And I remember one time I saw this woman at the workshop and I said, "Hey, how come you're here? I thought, you know, this didn't help you." She said, "Yeah, I had a frozen shoulder, and when you did the session, it didn't help me at all. Not till I was driving home that the frozen shoulder opened up." So the healing didn't happen on my time scale, but it worked perfectly well on her time scale.
Wow, what a great distinction. So as you were doing the free lectures, or, you know, the opening lecture, you would stay early before and early after, and you would see if you could touch as many people, if not everybody, there.
Yeah, before and after the lecture, I was doing demonstrations on as many people as I could get hold of, showing them what it was that this was really all about.
Oh, that's amazing. That is so, and I know from a speaking perspective, they say, when you're walking around the room, let's say speaking at an event, the people you connect with there, whether you ask them questions or interact with them or touch them or however it is, those are usually the people that go to your next course. So they feel that personal connection. So what you did was absolutely brilliant. You physically worked on everybody. So now they felt it. That's amazing.
And then once I got some students together, I'd invite any of my students to come to my lectures and give demonstration sessions. So when my book finally came out, I remember I was at a bookstore in Los Altos, and what I did was I gave demonstration lectures, and I had like six of my students in the back of the room doing sessions, and I said, "It's not rude for you to get up while I'm talking, go to the back of the room and get a session for a few minutes." And so people would get up out of their chairs all through the lecture. We had about 100 people at my first lecture I did in Los Altos at this bookstore. I think it was called East West Bookstore. And at the after the lecture was over and the workshop happened, we had over 100 students, about 115 students at the workshop, because we got more than 100% sign-up rate. Now, it wasn't all the same people, but people brought their friends and family. And we had more people coming to the workshop than I had at the lecture.
Wow. It's so amazing. Go ahead.
Yeah. Another trick that I did to help build workshops, and I don't know if this applies to everybody, but it really could, and is that I found out some people who had radio shows actually charged money for people to get on their radio show. Now, I don't know how you figure this out, but it did exist. And so they'd be interviewing some New Age person, and I'd pay them like $300 or $500 to get on their show. And I knew that I was not going to sign people up from a radio show. And what I would do instead is I'd rent some room somewhere to give a lecture. And I would tell people on the radio that if they come to these three lectures, and I'd have different locations at different times, different days rather, that I would be doing as many demonstrations as I could and talking about the work. And I would fill those rooms up with 40, 50 people or more. And they would come and attend the lecture. And then I would usually get 30, 40% of the people who showed up in terms of numbers of people who would actually take a workshop. So it built the size of the workshops up. So you got to just get creative and figure out ways of getting in front of more and more people.
Yeah, I love what you did, because you're giving them an experience. So it's so hard to, you know, it's one thing if you're telling people what you're going to do. It's another thing if you just give them a sample and 5 minutes or 3 minutes of an experience.
Exactly.
Especially even if, let's say, they're just a practitioner and they're not teaching workshops, if you want to get new clients, the best way to get a new client is to give them a 3 to 5 minute experience of taking away pain. now they know. So what a great, really, really good. And every time you're doing them, you're getting the benefit as well. So you're just probably feeling amazing. And that's probably what allowed you to keep going, I imagine, if you're doing so many sessions and you're
of course,
a little run down.
You know, they say a picture's worth 1,000 words, but the experience is worth a lot more.
Hmm.
Because you can't explain an experience.
Hmm.
And this is the real deal. This is the real experience that people can have. And when they have had that experience, now you don't need words to explain it. They know what it feels like to have had that experience.
Then it's an easy opening for either a class or a session or
exactly. Exactly.
That's great. Curious, Richard, what do you believe are the top three things that have made you successful? I mean, this organization has grown massively, it's global, it's constantly growing. What are the three things that have made you successful, what you do?
Well, I believe that I have a real passion to affect the world and to be inspired and to share inspiration. And then I think I'm somewhat gifted at being able to communicate. And so put these pieces together, then it has impact. Also, I think that to be able to find something that is so amazing and wonderful that you are inspired to share it, that's just really important too, because I'm always looking. It's just part of my lifestyle, but I'm always looking to say, what's better, what's next, what can I learn, how can I grow? And so we could be talking on 30, 50 subjects, and I would be telling you all kinds of interesting things that I've been learning, because I'm constantly looking to find out what's next, what's better, what's more exciting. And in pretty much any field that leads to a better life for myself or humanity, because that's just what I'm interested in. So I'm one of those people, if I find something, I want to share it. And that's what I do. And then, fortunately, enough people wanted to learn it. Now, personally, I believe that the market for quantum touch has not yet been touched, has not yet been tapped, because out of the 7 billion people on the planet, 0.00001% or something like that have learned about quantum touch. We have endless growth ahead of us. And now with the new work, the quantum touch level 2 or QT2, the new human, this actually could change fundamental beliefs about science and nature, redefine what's possible, and expand the definition of what it means to be a human being. This is so exciting, because since the time of Copernicus and Galileo and Newton, everybody has been believing, and this is true today too, the majority of scientists believe in something called the mechanistic model of reality. They think we're just machines. That's why people think that you'll be able to someday upload or download your consciousness into a machine. And because they think that we're all mechanistic machines and love is only an electrochemical reaction in the brain, they think we're going to be able to upload or download our consciousness and there's nothing else. They think that animals are just machines and it's okay to slaughter them in mass. And what we can do now is we can show people that the reality is so much more amazing than that. It's actually a spiritual reality where love is a spiritual energy that changes the outer reality. We're on the precipice, on the cusp of the biggest shift in belief that the world has ever experienced. We're right there on that edge. And so I'm excited about projects that I'm working on now. And, you know, this is what happens when you live in Los Angeles, is you start thinking about documentaries or TV shows and things, and usually it's just talk, and they don't ever happen. So I'm in the talk stage right now, talking it up and seeing if I can get people motivated to actually create documentaries and TV shows based around the discovery of what's possible and what human beings can do. So that's where I'm at now. Mm-hmm. And whether these things come about or not is another story, but this is what I'm working on.
That's great. And I'm curious too, you know, with all the success that you have had, have you ever been at a place where you felt like giving up and you found a way to break through that barrier?
Well, I get frustrated sometimes, and as anybody would, but it's always temporary because the desire and the passion is always there underneath. So, you know, life knocks you down and you get up. What else are you going to do, right? Mm-hmm. And so, of course, you get frustrated sometimes, but you just keep moving forward because that's where life goes.
Well, especially I'm thinking back to when you said you just got started and there'd be four people or there'd be, you know, and before, you know, don't have tons of money flowing in yet and you're going in and maybe you had some people that weren't as interested or whatever happened. Was there times like in the very beginning that you felt a little bit of that, like, man, should I keep going? Did you know the route ahead? Did you know you'd be traveling for 2 years and doing all these things? Or was there
more struggles than that? But I just knew that there were millions of people that wanted to know this. Hmm. And it was just my job to keep moving forward to bring it out there so that they would find out about it.
So your focus is really on the how many people can I affect and touch this with, because they have no idea what they're about to experience until they experience it, versus, oh, I only had two people here, either four people at this workshop. It's like, wow, these four people are going to experience it and they're going to share it with four more. It sounds like you're really focused on helping
those,
doing it.
Those four people at the workshops were so excited. And they would be blown away and say, why aren't there 100 people here? And I said, well, it's just a matter of time. Hmm. I remember one of the first four, he was so funny, and he didn't even realize it. He would say, so how does this work with people who have carpool tunnel syndrome? Or how does it work with Alzheimer's disease? And he was just coming up with these names for things that were really funny, carpool tunnel and Alzheimer's. It was really...
That's funny. And, you know, one of the things that we get a lot of feedback in is a lot of practitioners and instructors have a hard time growing their business.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds like just from listening to you, some of your key attributes were you were focused on doing the work, you wanted to spread it, you had a larger mission, you focused on your passion. If you were just starting out as a quantum touch practitioner or instructor, what would be the best advice you could give yourself?
I think what I would do is I would try to get parties together. And, you know, just organize parties. And if you didn't have a big party group, find friends who did have a big party group and tell them that you were going to have a healing potluck party or something like that. Just make up a name. And that at the party, you're going to be, it's a BYOP party, bring your own pain. And, you know, bring your own potato salad and pain or something like that. Just bring food and pain. And that you are going to volunteer and give everybody a few minutes of healing work so that they could experience quantum touch. And anybody who wanted to get private sessions or attend a workshop would be welcome to talk to you about it. It's just real low key. I would just have party after party. I would just go through my phone book, find out who could organize parties. Now look, we're all looking for an excuse to have fun, right? I mean, we're looking for a reason to celebrate every day. So make up a story. Okay, we're going to have a Thursday party. You know, that's what it was, Saturday afternoon potluck at someone's house, and it's going to be a bring your own pain party because we're going to have a healer here who's not charging anything. She's just going to help people take away their pain using this thing called quantum touch that she learned and now is a practitioner of, so that you can experience it. And we're just going to hang out and have fun, and she's going to do that. And maybe if we're lucky, she'll take 10 or 15 minutes and tell us about what she's doing and why it works, you know. And so I would just start there. And it's just a way of assembling people together. If you consider, if you attend a networking meeting of a, what do they call it, community, what are they called? Where they
their community meeting or community.
Yeah, the community meetings where all the different business people gather for some reason. You've been to those kind of meetings.
Yes.
Yeah, well, just whatever they call those. You just attend meetings like that, or just look up the meetings where people look, you know, link up online. I forget what that's called. Also, my brain must be asleep today.
Like the meetup groups or...
Yeah, the meetup, exactly. The meetup groups or the social networks or whatever it is. Just start going to meetings. And as you're meeting, you ask them what they do. And then they're obligated to ask you what you do. And then you say, oh, and years ago I was actually doing something where I was doing some casual selling. And I would just say little tiny tidbits to get people to ask me questions. Oh, I just take people's pain away. So what is that? I said, oh, well, I learned something. I put my hands on people and I can take the pain. Well, how do you do that? It's, oh, do you have any pain? You know, I just, as casual as that. You just start demonstrating. Oh, it's called Quantum Touch. I teach workshops and blah, blah. And I would just throw out little nuggets. They would be so curious as to get people to ask me more questions about it. And they would ask me lots and lots of questions. And I would tell them, if you want to learn, this is something, you know, it's amazing when your whole family learns this. All your friends and family, because when you know how to do this on each other, it's incredible. And then they'd bring their friends and family because you gave them the hint to do that. If you want to build a practice, do dozens or hundreds of little mini 3-minute sessions on people. Somebody, you know, almost any conversation you get with people, hang out in a coffee shop if necessary, and just chat with people, and you'll find out that they've got knee pain or back pain or shoulder pain or elbow pain or something is going on with them. And tell them you learned this thing, and they go, really? And you go, yeah, I can just put my hands on you right now and, you know, probably take it away or reduce it in a few minutes. Oh, yeah, you could learn it too. You know, just casual. Just make it casual and keep talking with people.
That's great. I think, you know, one of the other things I noticed you're really, really good at too is the stories. And as I'm listening to your process, you did so many healing sessions and worked on so many people, it became really easy for you to have a whole list of your own stories. When you first got started, did you use some of other people's? Because I've heard one of the, you know, people could do, if they listen to your stories, they can start out telling your stories as they develop their own. Is that anything like that you recommend? You're just such a great storyteller. I think that really helps validate what you're doing.
It did help me because I am a pretty good storyteller that way, but I pretty much just used my own stories because they kept coming up, because almost everybody you work on could potentially be a story.
Hmm.
Yeah, for instance, you go in there and you work on 8 people and 7 of them have some pretty amazing pain relief. Now you got a story. You say, yeah, I worked on 8 people and 7 of them had their pain go away in minutes. That's a story right there.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't take much. I did learn things from doing sessions. I remember once these people took me into a dorm and this woman was just loud, complaining of having a splitting headache, and she wouldn't stop talking about her headache. I said, well, would you like me to see if I can help you take your headache away? And she goes, sure. So she sits down. I work on her head for about 2 or 3 minutes. Her headache is gone. And I said, what do you think? She said, oh, I don't think I really had a headache. And everybody thought it was hysterically funny that she said that, but it taught me a lesson. And the lesson was asking people to rate their headache from 1 to 10 before I worked on it.
Hmm.
Because a surprising number of people forget that they had the headache. So if she says, it's a 9, and then a few minutes later she says, God, that's really weird. The headache is gone. I said, well, not bad to go from a 9 to a 1 or something like that. Then they've got some perspective, because a lot of people actually forget that they had pain. So part of the trick of helping them recognize how big the change was is to have them give a number to it before you begin.
Oh, that's another great distinction. That's really good, because I hear you do that, and I haven't heard as many other people do it, but that's why, because they would forget the pain would be gone.
Well, tell me, when your knee or back or foot hurt a year ago,
mm-hmm.
and the pain went away, how many times did you think about it afterwards?
No, you don't. You don't think about it at all.
once it's gone, it's out of mind, so there's no more thought about it whatsoever.
That's great. That's a really good distinction. Let's see, stories. What was it? One other thing? Oh, so as you're articulating it, is there any just key tips if they are doing radio, if they're doing any promotion or anything besides doing the work that as far as structure or format or anything like that as to get how to enroll people?
I think one of the key things is work on as many people as you can, talk to as many people as you can. Don't expect people to take a workshop or come to your private sessions because you just bought advertising. Advertising will probably just pay for itself. So if you want to spend a few $100 or $1,000 on advertising, figure you're just going to get your money back. And if you have the money to spare, it's okay. But I would use the advertising to get people to come to a lecture or demonstration. But the demonstration is where. See, just getting the people to show up is the key. That's what the advertising is for. It's a two-step sales process. The first step is to get them to get their attention. And once you have the attention, you can make the sale. The sale happens because you're showing them how amazing it works. That's where the sale is. But a lot of people think that the advertising will make the sale, and it doesn't. The sale happens when people have the direct experience of the work. Because realize, this is outside-the-box stuff. People don't generally believe that these things are possible. And when you show them that not only is it possible, but you can do it, and it's really amazing, and it works, then they're astounded.
That's great feedback. Another really key distinction. So if you're doing advertising, any of that, the whole thing is group healing, how to help your pain. Like you said, bring your own pain, something around their need that they're trying to solve to just get them to a free lecture or something like that so they can experience a demonstration, and then from there you take them to a class, a workshop, or a session.
Yeah. So then, for instance, if somebody has a booth at a fair, and you work out a deal with them that you can use a little portion of the booth and set up and say, you know, pain, you know, 5 minutes, you know, take your pain away in 5 minutes for $5 or something like that, you can get a lot of people interested in either being clients or taking workshops that way. Mm-hmm. But to figure that you can just put an advertisement somewhere and get people, it just doesn't seem to work that way. Because not till we get bigger and more well-known. And as, you know, Joshua, you know, we've hired a PR company to help us bring more visibility to Quantum Touch, and we're expecting that we're going to gain momentum in the coming year because of this PR company that we're working with. And some of our instructors are already saying, and practitioners too, that they're getting people coming to them without having to advertise. And that's great, but we're not quite there yet where we have become popular. If these TV shows and things that I'm working on come to pass, documentaries, then practitioners and instructors will just have people coming at them. But we're not even close to being there yet. And when that happens, then all the people who are set up will have come out kind of like a ready-made business coming to them. But in the meantime, it's up to us to continue generating the interest.
And one more key thing, if they are doing intro sessions or lectures, did you have a certain amount of time or the structure of how you would do those?
I would just ask people where their pain was, what they wanted me to work on, and I would just run energy using the Where Does It Hurt technique primarily. And I'd spend roughly 3-4 minutes with each person and just really bring the energy up high. I remember one guy came up to me. It was at one of these whole life expos, I think they were called. And after a lecture, I had about 50, 60 people in a line for me to work on. And people were telling other people about me working, so the line kept on getting bigger.
Wow.
And some man would just kind of watch me work, and then he'd come back another 20 minutes later, and he'd watch me work. I was probably working for about 2 hours after the lecture was over. And at the very end, when I had like two or three people left, he started talking with me. He said he was a Qigong master from China. He had studied with great Qigong masters. And he said, you do not look tired. In fact, you looked tired when you started your lecture, but now you look so much more energized than when you began. He said the Qigong masters that I've studied with can't do sessions for more than about 15 or 20 minutes because they use up all their qi. Mm. What are you doing? I said, well, I just keep gathering more energy as I'm working. I don't get drained. I get more energized when we're doing it. And this is actually something that you can tell people that I think I might have mentioned in the book. I'm pretty sure I did, which is that if you are going to see an energy practitioner, make your session first question is ask them how they feel after a long day of doing sessions. If they say, oh, I'm really drained and tired by the end of the day, go find another energy practitioner. If they say, I have supercharged and it takes a while to go to sleep because I'm so energized, book your session from them at the end of the day because that's when they have the most energy. When I was doing these sessions in long lines and working for like a couple hours at a time, working on person after person after person, at the end, people almost jumped like I was giving them a shock of energy. The energy got so high.
Wow.
The more you work, the stronger your energy becomes. And it seems to be you're pulling some energy too. You're actually gaining something from each person you're working on. You're getting some gifts from them too. It's not just a one-way street. And so your energy gets really pumped up by the end of working on 200 people or something. It's just amazing how much energy you get doing that. So
wow.
It's something to look forward to experiencing. So you have to get creative. You know, you go to the Chamber of Commerce meeting and you put on the little name tag and you start shaking hands and talking to people. And they say, what do you do? I say, well, I take people's pain away for a living. They go, what do you mean? I say, well, you have any pain now? And you just do that. You go to Chamber of Commerce meetings, if nothing else, and you start getting clients and people interested in workshops. You put yourself out there. You meet as many people as you can. You take people's pain away. And you have to get over the fear of doing something in public, like touching their shoulder or working on their knee. Yes, it looks a little weird, but how are we going to create a different way of being if we're not willing to be different? And this is what I want to see in the world. I want to see people at airports taking each other's pain away. And, you know, every so often I do see it. I'll be out in public somewhere and I'll see somebody putting their hands on someone else. And I'm thinking, yeah, that's part of the vision. The vision is seeing people willing to, well, literally share love in public. You know, it's not just a private thing.
I love it. I love it. I love it. What a great interview. So many key distinctions. And just what I kept hearing again and again and again is doing the work, being congruent. You know, as you're doing it, you're getting so many benefits and people are getting the benefits. So really, really great information and great feedback from this call today. Thank you. Thank you so much, Richard, for sharing your journey and how you've grown.
My pleasure. And thanks for pulling all that out of me. It was just sitting there waiting to come out.
Great, great tips, great advice. And, we'll do a quick summary of this, and we'll include this in this next newsletter. So thank you so much, Richard. I appreciate your time today, and thanks for helping us grow this organization. As you mentioned, there's so many exciting things that are coming down the pipe, so it's the perfect time to become a practitioner or an instructor. You're right in the right place.
Okay,
anything
great.
Else you would like to share with anybody?
Well, just always remind yourself and everyone else that their love has more value and impact than you know.
Wonderful. Okay. Thank you so much, Richard. You have a great rest of
your
day.
Take care. All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you.